The following program is a presentation of CRN Digital Talk Radio and Les Kincaid. And now it's time for Wines du Jour with your host, Chef Les Kincaid.
Thank you for joining us on Wines du Jour, broadcasting this time from Siena Trattoria here on Sahara Avenue in Las Vegas, Nevada, where you should be. My guest tonight is Giancarlo, who is the general manager here at Siena. I'm hoping he's going to be able to get free. They are busier than you can imagine out front. He's done a good job here. He's made this business work really well, and I think you're going to enjoy listening to him. He's from Italy, so he's got that, you know, Italian, hey, what do you mean, accent, and that's a good thing. we're going to pair some great wines along with it. The California winery that we're featuring this evening is J. Lohr Vineyards and Winery. And we have a special gentleman, the Nevada manager, is Michael Scuro, is going to be my guest tonight. And he's the one that's going to tell you all about the wines. And let me tell you, not only does he know about them, but these J. Lohr wines, if you're not already familiar with them, are absolutely outstanding and reasonably priced. We'll talk about that a little later in the program. Being America's number one syndicated radio food and wine program, we bring you great information about good wines and good food in each and every episode. Thank you for your inquiring emails coming from your home country from all around the world, from the East Coast, from the Left Coast, from Italy, from Baja California, from Argentina, just about everywhere. Welcome. Our in-house guest audience this evening are both hungry and thirsty and can't wait to get started. And Pasquale is pouring a little bit of Chardonnay for them as we speak. Our program broadcasts, remembering you each broadcast, why we reflect what we're all about, and that is wine is food. A meal is a meal, but with a glass of wine, it's a celebration. From casual gatherings to formal affairs, wine celebrates any event. So remembering this show, that we'll deliver you lots of information about taste and flavor as we enjoy good food paired here, because the important thing to remember is wine is bottle poetry. I like that. If this is your first time listening to Wines du Jour, stay tuned. You need to know that we do not allow snobbery or intimidation in the room during the broadcast, and Wines du Jour food and wine radio broadcast is distributed in all 50 states around the world via radio on CRN Digital Talk Radio Network, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, AHA Radio, and on several worldwide internet systems all around the globe. We're also available on podcast, and we're free on iTunes, so listen to us also on Wonder Radio or Warp Radio. You're listening to Wines du Jour. I'm your host, Les Kincaid, so don't touch that radio dial. We'll be back with fun, information, and great taste right here on Wines du Jour. But first, I want to introduce you to my guest this evening, the Nevada manager for J. Lohr Winery, Michael Scuro. Michael, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us this evening and allowing us to taste some of the beautiful wines that you're able to give everybody in Nevada a chance to taste.
Well, thanks, Les. Thanks, Les. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate you inviting me.
You bet. It's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about J. Lohr Wines.
So J. Lohr Wines, you know, as you mentioned, J stands for Jerry, for Jerry Lohr, and Jerry Lohr actually first discovered wine in California and planted in 1968 in the Central Coast in Monterey County, actually, and first produced in 1972. First release, it was actually a Petit Sirol red grape variety.
And it was a good wine. I remember it.
Yeah, it was delicious, and our first white wine was a Pinot Blanc. And that's actually in Monterey County is where our Chardonnay, our Riverstone Chardonnay that we are trying tonight, is from. We have in Paso Robles is where the wine center is that you mentioned, our winery.
Uh-huh.
And also in San Jose is where the wine center is, our corporate office. And we still bottle white wines there as well. But our Paso Robles, we have 2,300 acres of vineyards in Paso Robles. In Monterey County, we have 1,300 acres. In actually in Napa Valley in St. Helena, we have 35 acres.
Okay, so Jerry Lohr owns half of California. You didn't know that, but but when it comes to wine, that's just about true. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Michael and a little more information about J. Lohr, because taste this wine, folks, while we're on the break, and we'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet right here on Wines du Jour. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here at Siena, a beautiful Italian restaurant on Sahara Avenue in Las Vegas. If you haven't been there yet, you need to do it. They've been here for a few years. We'll find out a little bit more about it from Giancarlo a little bit later in the program when he's able to come in. I can't believe the business these people are doing. It is unbelievable. We have such a perfect room for our show this evening, and we're shut out so we don't hear the noise, etc. But let me tell you, this place is jumping. You know why? Damn good Italian cuisine. That's what it's all about. And so we're going to have some of that this evening to pair with our wines. And before we went to the break, we were talking with Michael Scuro about Jay Lohr Winery, or Jay Lohr Vineyards and Winery, and how many acres Jerry Lohr owns. And he probably has some special arrangements with other people that, you know, there are a lot of farmers that grow grapes to make wine, but they do not make wine. So they sell those grapes to wineries. And if their grapes are really good and they're willing to work with Jerry Lohr or his winemakers or the people that work for him, work well with them, they will make a contract to buy all their grapes for maybe 3 or 5 years down the line, which is a smart thing to do. So there are some wineries in the business that don't own any vineyards at all. They make arrangements to buy the grapes, and that's okay. But when you own most of them and you find somebody that has a really good terroir in their vineyard and you start buying from them, it just allows you to expand. So I'm going to ask Michael, how many different wines do you guys carry nowadays? You started out with one. How many do you have now?
Over 13 different grape varieties that we sell to the market, but we actually have 16 total grape varieties that we actually grow. And we have actually a rosé and a viognier and a white blend that we sell at the winery only, a couple hundred cases a year of those wines.
Yeah. I want to mention something about Jerry Lohr. Michael mentioned that they have two locations, one in Paso Robles and the other one in San Jose. And the only reason is I don't think there's another winery anywhere in the world that can say what I'm about to tell you. Jay Lohr Vineyards and Winery is the home office, or the corporate office, as Michael put it. It's located in San Jose. And I just want to tell you this because I think it's unique. Across the street from the winery is an elementary school. Next door to the winery is a hospital. Now, how in the hell does a winery get permission to build in a location across the street from a school and next to a hospital? And the answer is really simple. They were there first. So I just think that's something to remember. It's just a little bit unusual. And like I said, I don't think any other wineries have that.
No, we've been there since 72. And in 1986, that's when we opened our winery in Paso Robles.
Paso Robles. And boy, that has really turned out to be a good move, didn't it?
It was the best move. We're still family-owned and operated.
Right. Well, one of the good things about Paso Robles, and our third wine this evening, which is their Cabernet Sauvignon, which, of course, we'll talk in detail about later, is the grapes are grown in Paso Robles. And it turns out, you know, we talk a lot about terroir in the wine business. And terroir is just simply a French word that just means a combination of things. It's a piece of property, no matter how big or small, but a piece of property that how much rain it gets a year, how much wind it gets, how cold it gets, how hot it gets, all the different things, including the nutrition that's in the soil, all of that combined, the French call that terroir. So what we've discovered, and I think it's very interesting and important for people to know, is that a few years ago, and I'm saying a few, it could be maybe 30 years ago, they discovered, I say they, we're talking about winemakers and winery owners, discovered that a lot of the grapes they had planted were not conducive to the soil that they were planted in. In other words, the terroir didn't fit the varietal. And so over the last umpty-ump years, a lot of them have pulled out the grapes and replanted with the grapes that are conducive to the terroir. And the quality of wine in the world, not just in America or just in California, but in the world, has improved substantially over the last 50 years, specifically because this taking place. They're changing and making it work. I'll give you another example. A friend of mine, Brooks Firestone, That's from the Firestone Tire Company. They own a winery in Southern California. And Brooks and I have been friends for a long time. And when he comes over from California to Las Vegas, we typically would go to lunch together. Not an uncommon thing. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is this one particular time. In fact, I think it was the last time that he came over here, because he's now turned the business over to his son and so on. But he came over and he says, Les, I just pulled 60 acres of Pinot Noir. I said, what? He said, I just pulled 60 acres of Pinot Noir. I've had it for 11 years. I haven't made one bottle that's worth a damn. I just can't make a good bottle of wine because the terroir is wrong. And we've got 60 acres. We've pulled all 60. We've replanted with a Chardonnay. And it turns out, to make a long story short, a few years later, he starts winning gold medals for that Chardonnay, because they discovered that the right terroir was for Chardonnay and not Pinot Noir. Happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. That yeah. actually happened in with Jerry Lohr in Monterey, planting Cabernet and Merlot initially. And, you know, we just discovered that Cabernet and Merlot does not go great there, and that's when we discovered Paso Robles.
There you go. Well, that, so, you know, people that are interested in wine, and I know everybody here is interested or you wouldn't be here, these are the types of things that make sense as to why you like a wine. You know, I say this all the time, and I really mean it. You do not go into a retail wine store and choose a bottle of wine by the label. You know, it might be pretty, it might have artwork, it might be the right colors for you, but that has nothing to do with the quality of the wine in the bottle. So you don't have to spend $50 for a bottle of wine to make it taste good. Or the fact that it's less than $15 or $20 does not mean it's not a good wine. So it's, you don't have to spend money, I'm talking about a lot of money, per bottle. It's just not necessary. And one of the reasons that really verifies exactly what I'm saying is Jerry Lohr is a gentleman that's not too greedy. He's done very well for a long time, and he's not looking to double his money every year, if you know what I mean. So he puts his wines out at reasonable costs. So you and I can drink Jay Lohr during the week and not have to say it's on a special occasion, you know, like Norma's birthday or something like that. It could be something, you know, something that's pretty interesting. Don't be confused about the cost of a bottle of wine and assume that because it's expensive, it's great, or because it's not so expensive, it's not very good. Has nothing to do with it. My suggestion is discover wineries like Jay Lohr, and when you want a particular varietal, pick one of those and try that. Chances are it's going to be good, because you know the winemaker and the winery are very, very good. And chances are, if you've never tasted the varietal that you're interested in, such as maybe, say, a rosé, you know, the summertime coming up, start stocking up on rosé. Rosé is my suggestion for wines to drink when it's hot out. And, boy, it gets really hot out here in Las Vegas, and that's good. So we can drink a lot of wine. That's a good thing. Okay. How much time do we have before we go to a break?
7 minutes.
Oh, okay, great. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands that Jay Lohr Wines and this Chardonnay is exceptionally good. Let's talk specifically about this Chardonnay, and then I want to talk to you about the food that the chef has paired with it, which I think is absolutely perfect. But the wine, let's talk a little bit about your Chardonnay, if you would, Michael.
Absolutely. So this is our estate Chardonnay, Jay Lohr Estate Chardonnay. It's our Riverstone Chardonnay. And actually, the name Riverstone came from the soil that it's grown in Arroyo Seco AVA, which is in Monterey County. In the soil there, you have big river stones that help deposited over 1,000 years and made up the soil. So when you're drinking our Chardonnay, you'll get on your palate, you'll get white stone fruit, nectarine. You actually get a little touch of oak, a little touch of vanilla. Our Chardonnay is aged 7 to 9 months in American, Hungarian, and French oak. And on the back palate at the very end, you will get a little touch of minerality. And that actually comes from the soil with the river stones that actually make up the soil there.
I like it's a little bit buttery, and that's a good thing for a Chardonnay. What kind of a retail price would we expect to pay, just on average, not on sale, but just a regular price?
It goes anywhere from 10 to 12. It depends where you're buying it from.
Now, you know what? Most people, when they think Chardonnay, they think 25. That's how much they're going to have to spend to have a bottle of Chardonnay that they're going to like. It's not necessary, folks. J. Lore, that's the name that you want to remember. I want to mention also now that the chef has put together something that's pretty interesting, and everybody here has had an opportunity to taste it. Well, some of them are already finished. The pairing that he's done with it. He's taken some olives and cube mozzarella cheese, along with a little salami and some baby shrimp, a little lemon capers, which I think is a real good touch, along with making a bruschetta. Now, bruschetta is actually something that is taken and put on the Italian bread, sliced, put on a grill, so it's grilled lightly, take it out, and then they take chopped tomatoes and garlic and olive oil and parsley and so on and so forth and put on the top of it, and they call that a bruschetta. It's an appetizer, and it could have maybe 200 different combinations on top of it. This depends. And they're all called bruschetta because it is grilled bread. That's what bruschetta stands for. I don't know that that's what it means, but it stands for grilled bread. So that's pretty good. And this Chardonnay, it has a really long, lingering finish, I like to call it, on this Chardonnay. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can taste it. After you've swallowed it, you can continue tasting it in a very positive way for quite a while. The butteriness I like real well. And Chardonnay not only goes with bruschetta or mozzarella cheese or what have you, but it also goes really well with roast chicken. Now, if you know how to roast a chicken, you have the key to making one of the best dishes in the whole world. I know it sounds simple, but if you make a roast chicken right, it is so tasty, you can't believe it. And this J. Lore Chardonnay paired with it has got to be a perfect combination. Now, if you want to add other things with it, like mushrooms or, you know, whatever your side dishes might be, fine. But just a nice golden brown roast chicken done properly with extra virgin olive oil on the outside, maybe a little lemon and onion on the inside, roasted at about 425 for probably roughly an hour, depending on the size of the chicken. It'll come out to be golden, beautiful, and very, very tasty. Juicy and flavorful. And chicken, you know, I think we overdo chicken, especially the average American female loves, and this is not a pun now, they love, you know, boneless, skinless chicken breast. That's their favorite dish. Why? Because it's easy to make. It tastes like crap, but it's easy to make. You have to have something to put with that chicken breast, if you will, to give it some flavor. Because chicken breast, on the chicken, let me just mention this, the tastiest part of the entire chicken is the wing. You know why you love chicken wings? It's because it's got the most flavor of the whole darn chicken. Next is the thigh. It's got a lot of meat, a single bone. And it's dark meat, and some people, they think that's a sin to have dark meat. And then the least tasty of all of them is the chicken breast. So get some sauces, get some marinades, get some rubs to make that chicken breast taste good, or grow up and go to a different part of the chicken or something else to eat. That makes sense? It does to me. I hope it does to you. Okay. Now, this Chardonnay has a little apple, a little nectarine taste to it, which I think is pretty good. We're going to have to go to a break, so don't worry. We will be back. We're going to go to a break coast to coast and around the world on the Internet when we return right here at Siena Italian Restaurant, Trattoria, as we call it, on Sahara. Be back in a moment. Back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time at Siena. And let me tell you what, this Chardonnay, you know, I talk about almost every week about the percentage of alcohol in a bottle of wine. And this Chardonnay that we have this evening has 13.5% alcohol, which is perfect. You know, anything over 14 or 14 and a half, that's getting up there. And the only reason I'm saying that is not because of the alcohol and drinking it and you're going to walk funny or anything. That has nothing to do with it. We're talking about pairing it with food. And anything that has like 15 and a half, 16% alcohol is very difficult to pair properly with food. It's just too hot. The alcohol is too hot in taste now. I'm not talking about anything else. But the taste just doesn't work well. So when you get it down around anywhere around 13 to 14 and a half, you're right in the ballpark, and it's great. You know, years back, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the average wine, white wine like this Chardonnay, instead of being 13.5, would have been probably 11, 11 and a half. But when they started discovering, which was about 10 years ago, I'm going to say, maybe 15 at the most, that if you allow the grapes to stay on the vine longer than you used to be when the grape sugar content, we call it Brix in the wine business, when the Brix got up to be about 25%, that's when they take them out of the field and make wine. And they discovered if they allow it to get riper on the vine, the taste is going to be stronger. The sugar content is going to be higher, and when you take yeast and sugar, the conclusion is alcohol. So what happened is all of a sudden, instead of 14 and a half or 14 or a little less alcohol percentage, it's going to be around 15, 15 and a half or 16. Same grape, same vineyard. The difference is the Brix was about 32 instead of 25, and therefore the sugar was higher. And when the sugar's higher, the alcohol is automatically higher. So we're talking now, we've been complaining, or at least I have, along with several other people, complaining about having just way, way too much alcohol in our wines, even though the wineries liked it because people wouldn't buy it and have to put it in their cellar or in a closet or someplace for 6 months or a year before it tasted right because it was just didn't have the right taste. Now, because of the sugar content, that changed, and consequently, the increase in volume. And that's what the winery is all about, selling wine. Okay, I understand that. But I also understand that wine is food. And that's the important thing to remember from my standpoint. I don't make wine, so I guess I don't have to worry about that part of it. But the thing is, I do pair food and wine. And that's what it's all about. If you can pair something that has the right amount of alcohol with it, then the alcohol isn't a big part of it. It's the taste. But if the alcohol is a major part of the taste, then you're going to have a tough time pairing the wine and a good food to go along with that. Okay, enough of that. I just thought you'd be interested in doing that. Another thing I wanted to mention is a little bit of oakiness in this wine. And a lot of times we refer to it affectionately as vanilla. And vanilla only comes from one thing, and it's not the grape. Vanilla comes from the oak barrels that the wine is aged in. So if you have a little vanilla or what we call toasty taste in your wine, you know that it's been aged in an oak barrel. Now, the oak barrels at J. Lohr, they rotate with two or three different originations, if you will, of oak. And Michael mentioned a couple moments ago about the French oak, the American oak, and Hungarian oak. And Hungarian oak is something that's fairly new in America. It came, I'm going to say, 15 years ago, but unfortunately they were telling you it was Hungarian when it was actually something else, and we found out they weren't telling the truth, and the winemakers quit buying Hungarian oak. Well, now they've settled down, and they only sell Hungarian oak as Hungarian oak, and it's starting to come in because it has a really good taste and flavor as a result of aging it in the barrels. Do you agree with that?
I do. Little Hungarian oak's considered kind of neutral.
Right. You know. Now, we have typically in the world, we have French oak, which is considered to be number one by an awful lot of winemakers. Not everybody believes that, but a lot of them do. And then we have American oak, which comes from the central and northern part of America up into Canada. That's where the forests are, and they have some very good oak, and it works very well. Now, just to give you an example, you go down to Australia, and the oak that they use is not French oak, it's American oak. They use very little French oak, and 95%+ of the oak barrels that they age their wines in is American. However, Hungarian is starting to creep in because we're starting to believe everything they've said. You know, I hate to put it that way, but that's truly what the problem is or was. And so that's all working. Okay. So we have the toasty oak, a little bit of hazelnut that I thought was good. And, you know, the people that really have a palate, they call that toasty hazelnut. I don't get the you know, I'm lucky to taste the hazelnut, not to mention one that's kind of toasty, you know, with the as far as the palate is concerned.
Well, yeah, the great thing about wine, Les, is
the reason. Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're having a good time here at Siena Italian Restaurant on West Sahara here in Las Vegas. And we're talking some excellent wines this evening. J. Lohr Vineyards and Winery from both San Jose, California, and Paso Robles area. The second wine that we're tasting this evening happens to be 2014 Falcon's Perch Pinot Noir. Now, Pinot Noir is the most difficult grape in the world to grow. I say this quite often, but it is. It's important to know that just because you have planted 20 acres or 5 acres or whatever it might be of Pinot Noir does not mean that you're going to be able to make a good bottle of wine. Unless, remember the terroir I mentioned earlier? Unless the terroir is right for that Pinot, it ain't going to happen. And boy, let me tell you, there's a lot of Pinot Noir around this world that is planted in the incorrect. No doubt about it. You know what I mean by incorrect. Yeah, okay. So a couple people asked during the break what the percentage of alcohol is in that Chardonnay that we just finished, and it's 13.5. I think I did mention it, but anyway, it's 13.5. And before we go any further, let me talk about the Pinot Noir. It is 13.8. So Jerry Lohr's done another good one. He's got great Pinot Noir. Coming to us from Monterey County, and it comes from the Falcon's Perch, which Michael talked about just a little bit more, a little bit earlier, I should say. Could you tell us a little bit more about this Pinot?
Yes, so this is one of our estate wines. It's a J. Lohr Estates Falcon's Perch Pinot Noir. And as mentioned before, Jerry Lohr has been making wine. His first release was 1972. This is one of our newer wines. This is actually 2014, its fourth vintage, so it's still considered kind of a baby. And the vineyards are in Monterey, and the reason why that we named it Falcon's Perch, this is a true story. In the vineyards there's one lone pine tree that a falcon made its home in the pine tree, and we discovered why. Is in vineyards throughout the world, you have problems with rodents that eat the roots that go in the ground, and little birds eat the grapes. Well, falcons eat
both.
Love both. So the falcon found its home there and made its home in the lone pine tree. And since then, we've actually added bird homes throughout all of our vineyards to help keep us we are 100% certified sustainable winery, one of the first of the 17 wineries in California to be certified sustainable. And the falcon helps keep us certified sustainable. We're the largest solar power winery in the United States as well. We have 3 acres of solar power. Yes, thank you.
That's great, yeah.
And so this, our Pinot Noir here is 100% Pinot Noir. It sees very little oak, just a touch of oak, and the winemaker wanted to make sure that the fruit really shows through. It's really fresh and vibrant, and when you drink it, you'll get a lot of strawberries. I like to call it wild strawberries on your palate with a touch of rhubarb, just a touch of vanilla spice oak, just a touch because it sees just a little oak. Really fruit forward. Goes great with food or by itself.
Great. Well, that's good advice. Also, almost always, no matter whether it's an outstanding Pinot Noir or a mediocre Pinot Noir, one of the first things that you're going to taste is cherry. And cherry is definitely here in this Pinot Noir. I want to mention some of the things that Pinot Noir goes really well with, and I'm not going to talk about the one everybody else talks about, but I'm going to talk about, are you familiar with the low country food? Low country being around Alabama, northern Florida, South Carolina, you know, that part of the country in the south, if you will. Well, if you know, or if you go down to New Orleans also, I taught cooking down in New Orleans for a couple years, and I can tell you the gumbo and all that sort of thing down there is unbelievable. It is not hot, does not blow the top of your head off. It is tasty, full of flavor. Okay, this Pinot Noir goes really well with andouille gumbo. I mean, if you make gumbo and you don't know what to serve with it, Jay Lore Pinot is perfect. And then right now, you know, salmon is pretty popular with everybody, and I'm hoping if you've improved on just buying a fillet at the store and taking it home and putting it in a skillet or putting it in the oven, but maybe putting it on your grill, and maybe you've gone a step further and learned how to do a little smoking on your barbecue. And if you could take a little bit of smoke and put that salmon in your barbecue, not with the heat so much, but with the smoke, and that just means that you put the salmon on one side of your barbecue and the heat that you have that's going to make the smoke is on the other side. That's called indirect cooking. And that means it's not going to hardly put much heat in the salmon. It won't really cook it, but it'll get that smoke that you want. And then you can cook it in the house or however on the grill like you normally would. And you've got a real nice smoky salmon. And boy, let me tell you, smoky salmon and this Pinot Noir are a perfect match. There's no doubt about it. And then one other thing I want to mention about this Pinot Noir that's so good. You like cheese? Most people do. Okay. There's a cheese called Chèvre. Everybody familiar with that? Chèvre cheese. Buy some the next time you go to the store that has it. Take it home. Open up a bottle of this Pinot Noir and sit down with maybe a little French bread or some crackers, whatever you like, with a little Chèvre cheese and a little bit of this Pinot Noir, and you'll be in seventh heaven. No doubt about that. You agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really a good thing. So what would the retail price of this Pinot be across the country on average?
It ranges from 14 to 19.
$14 to $19 for a Pinot. I'm sorry, folks. You know, I guess we're proving what I said earlier. You don't have to spend a lot of money for a damn good product. So that's what it's all about. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Pinot, but then we're going to go to wine number three, which is one of my favorites, a 2013 Seven Oaks Cabernet Sauvignon from Paso Robles. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Wine Du Jour. Boy, I'll tell you, this Pinot Noir from Jay Lore is absolutely outstanding. And I just want to make sure you remember when you go to the retail store that this is called Falcon's Perch Pinot Noir from Monterey County. Unbelievable. 13.8% alcohol, 100% Pinot Noir, and it is really, really good. Now, the third wine they're going to be pouring here in just about 3 or 4 minutes is the 2013 Jay Lore Seven Oaks Cabernet Sauvignon from Paso Robles. Now, I'm going to ask, if you would, Michael, to tell us a little bit about this, because this is not, you know, the Chardonnay was 100% Chardonnay, the Pinot Noir is 100% Pinot Noir, but this Cabernet Sauvignon coming from Paso Robles is not 100% Cabernet. In fact, it's a pretty healthy blend, but boy, wait till you taste it. Tell us a little bit about it, if you would, Michael.
Okay, this is our Jay Lore Estate Seven Oaks Cabernet Sauvignon, and the name Seven Oaks actually came from in our winery in Paso Robles, right there in our vineyards. There are seven oak trees, and over the years they keep getting bigger and bigger, and actually the name of the Seven Oaks was actually from the seven oak trees in our vineyards to honor the oak trees. True story. But actually, this Cabernet Sauvignon is our 2013, and this is our driver wine that we will say for our winery. It's our biggest volume wine. It's our wine that everyone knows, that you'll see it in restaurants and stores throughout the entire world. You'll see, you know, our Jay Lores, and we're huge in Canada. We're huge in China and Europe. We're a worldwide known brand. So,
right, absolutely.
Absolutely, and this Cabernet is delicious. This is always number one and two in the country and sells for last over 20 years now at this price point for Cabernet Sauvignon.
Right. Well, you know, the winemaker is an absolute gem. I don't know what winemakers make as far as dollars and cents is concerned, but I know they're able to drink wine when they want to, and that's enough pay for most of them, if you know what I mean. Now, but before we get on this Cabernet, I want to finish with the Pinot Noir, because I did not mention what the restaurant has paired with that. And let me tell you, first of all, it had a crostini on the plate that had salmon on it. Now, I want to tell you, I mentioned earlier about bruschetta, and now I'm going to talk to you about crostini. And believe it or not, bruschetta and crostini look exactly the same. They are made exactly the same with one exception, and this is the difference between bruschetta and crostini. Bruschetta is the bread has been grilled. Crostini is the bread has been baked in the oven. It gets toasty in the oven. That's the difference. The toppings, all that sort of thing, could be exactly the same. So now you know, most Italians don't know this, I have to tell you. Now you know that bruschetta means grilled. I mean, it doesn't mean grilled, but it stands for grilled bread. And crostini stands for baked or ovened bread. Okay? Everything else could be the same. Now, they've taken what I think is a pretty nice combination. It had goat cheese, and most everybody likes goat cheese, along with smoked salmon. And then they've taken some fresh dates, which is one of my favorite things, and wrapped it in bacon and put it in the oven and crisped up the bacon. So you've got this fresh date wrapped in bacon, and boy, about one or two bites and it's gone, but it is really very, very good. Okay, enough of that. Let's get down now to our Cabernet Sauvignon. Tell us a little bit about how you've put this together, because it's complicated from a winemaker standpoint, but it's damn tasty from a consumer standpoint. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Actually, I don't put it together. Our winemaker puts it together, and they do that at the vineyard. Actually, the 2013 Cabernet Sauvignon, it's actually aged 1 year in American oak. And the oak is actually comes from Missouri and Minnesota. And we the barrels are toasted. And we flavors on your palate, you're going to get really intense fruit aromas of black cherry and blueberry and a touch of plum and dark chocolate with a little toasted pastry at the end. Delicious, actually.
That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds really good. Now, let me mention to you of what they've done for a combination of different varietals blended together to make this Cabernet Sauvignon. Well, you have to know that at least 75% of the wine is Cabernet Sauvignon, okay? And then they've taken 7% Petite Syrah, 7% Merlot, 4% Petite Verdot, 3% Syrah, 1% Cab Franc, or Cabernet Franc, if you will, and then there's 3% left, if you've been doing your math. There's 3% left, and it's a variety of other little things that don't matter too much. It just changes the taste slightly. And this is where the winemaker makes his money. This man knows how to take this combination and make it taste the way he thinks Cabernet Sauvignon should taste. And let me tell you, I don't think he's wrong at all. What kind of a price do we expect to pay for this on a retail level?
It actually goes from 12 up to 19.
Holy mackerel, 12 to 19. Well, another thing, because I know you're going to ask me during the break, I'll just tell you before we go to the break, that the alcohol percentage here on this one is all the way up to 13.9. So we've got 13.5, 13.8, and 13.9. That is perfect for pairing. And when we get back, I want to tell you a little bit about what the chef has put together to pair for this, because it is an absolute perfect combination of the Cabernet and the pairing for the food.
I agree.
You agree? Great. Okay. We got to go to a break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back coast to coast and around the world on the internet right here at Siena. That's an Italian restaurant in Las Vegas. Be back in a moment.
The dining room feels very pretty.
Welcome back to Wines du Jour. We're here at Siena Italian Trattoria on Sahara Avenue in Las Vegas, and that's where you need to go when you come to town. If you want a good bottle of wine, you want a good dinner, you want a good lunch, you can just come to Siena, and they've got it all. Made the way they eat in Italy. And if you've ever been to Italy, you have to know the food there tastes different than it does in America. Now, it's not because they cook a lot different. It's because of the, remember I said earlier, the word terroir? Terroir is so important. The regions in Italy are each dependent on their own location. Another, what I'm saying is there's about, well, first of all, I say there is no such thing as Italian food. There's Italian cuisine, regional. That means that each region, and there's, I think, nine regions throughout Italy, each have their own way. And what I mean by that is, if you go to, let's say you're in Rome, and you order a lasagna at a local restaurant, and you're going to love it, it's going to taste good, and then you go to another area and you order lasagna there, it is not going to taste like it did in Rome. And the reason isn't because they can cook better or not cook better. It's because the way they use the local ingredients. Yeah. And what we say when it comes to pairing wine with food, especially in Italy, because there's over 250 varietals in Italy, the most in any country in the whole world, but the reason is the region dictates what kind of grapes they like to grow. And the grapes that they grow dictates what kind of food they like to pair with it. And it's different than the area next to it or down the road or whatever the case may be. So don't expect Italian food, so to speak, to taste like it does everywhere you go. It ain't going to happen. But if you come to Siena, and if you go to the kitchen, if you don't speak Italian, you might not be able to get your way through the kitchen.
Oh, geez.
Because this is for real. This is a good thing, and that just means that they know how to do it properly, and they get all the products that they can possibly get, either direct from Italy or some that taste the same that's made or grown, if you will, in Los Angeles or in California or even in Las Vegas. Well, one of the good things is, I told you earlier at the beginning of the program, Giancana Carlo was very, very busy because this place is jammed out front. But he happened to take a minute to come in to say hi to everybody. So, Giancarlo, thank you very much for your hospitality and allowing us to come to your restaurant. And your food is absolutely outstanding.
Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about Siena real quick.
Siena. Okay. Siena was since 1978, which I had a lady, she stopped me. It was for an old man called Mike. He made an amazing job.
I remember
job.
Mike.
For
I'm
over,
like
yeah, it was UNLV next to,
right.
So a lot of,
yes.
So he opened several locations, he gave it to the kids all around, and then eventually the area changed and they went down. So about 10 years ago, we decided to take over. I worked with Mike for almost a year and a half before he retired. We transferred the location and the site. We bought the restaurant. We attached the deli. We mixed some of the ingredients. We renovate a little bit of what it can be old cuisine, nouvelle cuisine, regional cuisine. So there is our dishes. They are pretty much all over Italy. So you have places from Sardinia. You have dishes from Rome, dishes from Calabria.
Well, I'll tell you, the food here is unbelievably good. The wine selection is very, very tasty as well. And I have to tell you that Jay Lohr is one of the wines that's on the wine list here at Siena. Got to go to a break. Oh, I'm sorry. We got to go. We're running out of time. When you're having fun, you what they say. I want to thank you for listening to Wines is Your Food and Wine program coming to you this show from Siena Trattoria on Sahara. And for Jay Lohr Wines and all the beautiful jobs.
All right.
I also want to thank my engineer, Jeremy Knight. Thanks for listening.
Oh, okay.
See you next time. Good night, everybody.